Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talbot, Tony Venus, and Matt Enders as the Beaver.
All right, and this is Tony Bemis,
Matt Enders,
and Mary Tomich,
and this is episode 133.
It's Morse time. Well, that was quick. All right, well, let's say what that is. That is the Morse code. Oh, and actually, no, what we need to do is tell you why we're playing that. We are playing that because this is one of those historical moments. In this day in history, I think it was back around 1852, the first, and I'm actually going back to it, the first time signals were transmitted by telegraph from the Royal Observatory in Greenwich.
So this was, it's the day that the first NTP server went online.
Yeah.
That's right. And this was the... That's right. And...
That's Morse for...
SMLR.
That's right.
And actually, it's probably the first time that's ever been transmitted like that. So, anyway, but that's the rest of the story behind our episode name this week.
All right.
Well, I guess it's time to catch up.
Yeah, so what did you do this week, Mary?
I was going to just ask you that.
Yeah, you need to do it.
Yeah, well, let's see here. Well, you know, I went to the Lions game last night, and that was when the number of penalties is by both teams is greater than the score of both teams. It's a snoozer, or a mess, one of the two, but, I did that.
It was a Lions game.
Yeah, I know. I had great expectations for that game. And,
why?
Well, I'm always hopeful. I drink that Honolulu Blue Kool-Aid.
Yeah, you know
every
what?
Every year.
Every year I say, this is the year too.
And it just
never happens.
So, we'll see what happens.
Except
it's preseason.
I'm not a Lions fan.
That's right.
I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan.
So. Speaking of that, Tigers lost to the Twins 20-6.
No, I like the Tigers though. I don't like the Twins.
I know, but anyway, we'll move on out of sports because this isn't a sports show. But the only thing I want to mention is that I'd come across this reference to a little tool called, I guess it allows you to change the intensity of your terminal. It's X backlight, I think that's what it is. And I thought, well, I'm going to give this a try. So I installed it because it's available in the Ubuntu or Kubuntu repositories. And it installed, but then I attempted to use it, and it said something about no outputs or something to that effect. So I thought, well, maybe I don't have a true terminal. Maybe I have something else that just looks like a terminal, but I couldn't get it to
work.
How
did you get to the terminal?
I found it in my menu.
You were using an X terminal.
Okay, see, that's...
Try doing a separate TTY. So
okay.
Control-Alt-F2,
I betcha, yeah, and I kind of thought that I knew I was doing something along the lines of not having the right terminal, so you're right.
I would think, but I'm not guaranteeing. I don't know what this problem is.
I'll try that when I get home then and just see if that works. The only other thing is that as we speak, my workstation at home should be updating to KDE 4.14.
All right.
Yeah, I discovered I didn't have the backports or the PPA because they're a little more quick than Ubuntu. They've got their own separate
PPA.
Yeah, for that.
Yeah.
So I installed it and it's updating now. It may be done.
Sweet.
So, 253.
Hopefully it boots when you get home.
I was going to say that too.
Yeah, there's always that fear. All right. So anyway, but that pretty much sums it up for me.
All right.
And Tony, what about you?
I guess we're saving the best for last.
Hurricane Electric thinks that I am an IPv6 professional.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Scary stuff.
Yeah. So to get that.
You're in Michael Moll.
I was going to...
Well, I don't know it that well.
Now, before we go any further, why don't you explain what Hurricane Electric is for those of us who might not be familiar?
All right, so Hurricane Electric is a company that provides free IPv6 tunneling. So you can do IPv4, like your computer or your server or whatever you have. You can do it on routers or whatever. Mm-hmm. Tunnel 2 Hurricane Electric, and they will give you an address space for free.
So what's in it for them? Are there ads?
I haven't figured that out yet. Mm-hmm. I think it's mainly to evangelize IPv6, to get people to know about it and working on it. And
Hurricane Electric's a backbone and a colo provider.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
And basically IPv6 addresses are totally free right now. So mm-hmm. they're doing it just...
To promote themselves. Put a pin in your bubble over there. but anyway, that's kind of cool, though.
Yeah, so you have to have a static IP address on your end, a V4 static IP.
Right.
So the only static IP I have is my... You
mean your public IP address has to be static.
Correct.
Or it doesn't have to be static, but if it changes, you're broken.
Right, okay. Yeah. Then you have to kill the tunnel and restart it.
So how do you get a public IP?
You either have to through your ISP has to have it, or if you have a VPS or a server.
Dyn DNS on the, used to do.
No, not Dyn. No, a VPS is a virtual private server.
Who do you have a private IP with?
I have it through DigitalOcean.
DigitalOcean VPS?
Yeah,
a bunch of guys at work have one of those too. Are they fairly cheap?
$5.
$5 a month?
And you get 20 gigs of space, a terabyte of bandwidth.
Holy shit.
And the server has 512.
Holy crap.
Yeah. The server has 512 megs of RAM. And they have, it's similar to EC2 where they have all these images. You just say go. And
really?
Within like 55 seconds, you can have a whole server running.
I'll be signing up for Hurricane Electric today.
No, DigitalOcean. Electric. Yeah, so what I'm doing is I'm running my tunnel from my VPS.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then I can then do an SSH tunnel from my laptop to my server. And then now I have a V6 tunnel going out. So I can do all my testing and everything from my laptop, but going out through that Hurricane Electric tunnel. So it's a tunnel on top of a tunnel going out.
Wrapped in what's the rest of that?
About halfway through that, my head started to hurt. So.
But anyway, the what you have to do is first you just create the tunnel, then you're a newbie. And then, no, I'm sorry, you just sign up for it and you're a newbie. Then you create the tunnel, then you're something. I don't know, I skipped right past it, so I don't know what it's, I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, I see. That was the road to getting your professional.
Right.
Because it's like a test. I signed up for this, and then I needed that VPN tunnel, so I stopped. Years ago. This was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, I was about to do it, too. And then the next step was to have a web server running IPv6 only by name. So I just did some Apache configurations to run to run multiple websites on my server.
Vhost files.
Yeah, Vhost files. So I created one and called it IPv6. So if anybody wants to test it out, it's ipv6.beamushosting.com.
Ooh, uh-huh. Anyone with the subdomain.
Yeah. Well, it's because I already had the domain and everything. And then in my Namecheap registrar, running them as my DNS, you can specify IPv6 addresses in that.
Okay.
So that's all I did. I stuck that in the DNS and...
I have a question. Actually, it's not an IPv6 question. It's an Apache question.
Sure.
You mentioned the two vhosts you put in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's my question. You don't need to have, the websites for those working. You just have to have the vhost, that reference in the Apache config file.
It goes
and
in.
Whatever connects to it thinks that they're there, and that's all you need.
Like under CentOS, the vhost files live in var httpd conf.d.
Sites enabled.
No.
Or in site.
Ours don't live there.
Somewhere.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. In Debian. It's Apache 2 slash sites available is where the actual config file lives.
Okay.
And you have one for each vhost.
Oh, I see.
And then in sites enabled is
yeah.
And that's all you need.
Under CentOS, they live
in var, no, etsy, httpd, conf.d, mm-hmm. and then the vhost file.
Oh, okay.
And that allows you to have that Apache web server to serve up a bunch of stuff.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I played around with that a little bit. I just didn't realize.
Right. And you specify in the vhost file the IP address that the site is supposed to use.
Okay.
Mm, you can. You don't have to. I didn't. I just have Apache responding.
You got to say IP address colon, then whether it's port 80 or port 443.
Well, that's
no,
a port.
No, it's not IP address. It's name. Vhost is name.
What?
A vhost, a virtual host. How is it going
to Right,
specify?
But you've got to tell it where to listen.
Yeah. No, Apache knows to listen to. I have set Apache set to listen to all IP addresses on the machine. So because I have like four IP addresses, and so it's listening to everything. And whenever it sees a request come in for ipv6.beamishosting.com, it says go to this document.
But we have a lot of customers.
And when I have one that says go to support, it goes to a different document route.
We have a lot of customers that have there where we have multiple customers on one machine. Where some of those customers have dedicated IP addresses because they have SSLs.
Oh, yeah. So, then, yeah, I can see that.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's how I configured
it. That was like a little mini lesson.
Right. So the one, there's one is the, you have to do, or to get professional, you have to put a file into that web space. Mm-hmm. And then it tests for that file, and then it knows that you're, and it gives you some random, so you can't know ahead of time. You can't just have somebody else do it and, or specify the name.
And so, there's a timeout.
Yeah. So I stuck it in there. It tested. It gave me professional. And then, to be professional, then you have to have a mail server running on it also responding to IPv6. So I had to set up a mail server, which is, it's actually really simple. I have no,
if you want just a relay, buddy, I'm your man.
Anyway, and then...
could it be a relay?
I wanted to...
So what did you do on Tuesday, then?
It had to be locked down?
It's... Oh, no, it doesn't... No, you have to be able to receive the mail and tell what a string in that message was.
I can set that up in less than 5 minutes. The mail server will also be an open relay, and as soon as a spammer finds it, I'm in trouble, but I can set it up in about 5 minutes.
Right. But it also has to be running on IPv6 and responding to that name and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, long story short, I got it all done.
I think that, I don't think we can shorten that. I think that's...
Yeah, I should have kept that for like a tool tip.
Yeah.
How to become a HE.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, so that was my big thing this week. Besides beers with you guys.
Yeah, that's right.
KDE party on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, for anybody who saw that picture I posted, all those cars were not for our KDE.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
It was a concert.
Hey, it was more than just the three of us. That's
yes,
all.
Yes, that's right. It was more than just the three of us.
Yes, we did have someone other than at least someone other than the three of us.
Yes, that's right. We had a good time.
Old friend Bill was there.
Yeah. All right. So, I guess that just leaves you, Matt.
No, it doesn't.
It does, but with interesting.
Mm, it was a rough night last night. At least,
yeah.
For the first 40 minutes, it was really bad. Then it got really easy. So it was like it got all out of the way at the very beginning. So
Is that better than having it? I think that's better than having it get all out of the hand at the end.
Usually,
having it in the middle is probably the best.
It usually
ramp
is
up
in the middle,
like a bell curve,
because it usually when
bell
stuff is going to blow
busyness.
Up, it doesn't always blow up. But when stuff is going to blow up, it usually does it between 3:15 and 4:30
a.m.
Yes, because I work at night.
Well, just for folks who might not know that.
And but last night, like 40 minutes into my shift, I had to make at least 5 trots, because if you've ever seen this body, it doesn't run. I had to make at least 5 trots into the DC and I was actually able to save most of the servers from going down.
Oh, that's good.
So, I mean, in one sense, they were down because they
were attacked.
No, they stopped serving pages, but
Were they Windows servers?
No. Oh. We don't. We host some Windows servers. Uh-huh. We don't support Windows.
Oh, okay.
If you want to run Windows, you're on your own.
Bring your own server. Is that BYOS?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then at about, we host a couple of different movie sites.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the movie sites we host.
Yeah.
Started really freaking out around, I don't know, I guess it was like 2:30, 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. In the morning?
Yeah. And
not watching movies that late?
No. This is movie news sites.
Oh, okay.
And I couldn't figure out why, man. I kept stopping Apache and mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure it out. They were getting like 10,000 hits a second. I thought it was some kind of DDoS or attack they were getting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's what I would think.
No. The night supervisor found the tweet.
Oh.
Right before they started getting all this traffic, they tweeted that they had just posted an article on Matthew McConaughey was selected to be somebody in the new remake of Stephen King's The Stand.
Oh.
And when I went back and looked through the traffic, that's where all these hits were going, was that article.
Yeah.
From the tweet.
Oh my gosh.
So.
So sort of scary for a minute there, but, it all worked out.
Yes.
Good. Hey, speaking, and actually I'm trying to find it. You're talking about this tweet thing. I wanted to tell you that when I was doing my review, which we'll get to in a little bit, I wanted to mention that I had done some lookup of, the core utilities, the GNU core utilities, just to see the list and what was contained in it. Have you ever heard of Yes?
Great band. I used to own several of their albums.
I'm referring to one of the core utilities in the GNU core utilities. Here's what it does. And I tell you what, it does it. And I thought, oh my God, how do I stop it? If you put yes, space, and then put a phrase, a word, or something like that, it will just repeat it forever. And then control C stops it. But,
do you know why?
Yes. Oh, I mean, no.
Because control C stops everything.
I know that.
Okay.
I know that. But I'm just saying that.
What would you need a utility to do that for? That's. I thought that's why you're wondering, yeah. Saying why. Do you know why?
I don't know.
I don't care less.
Yeah.
I'm never going to use it.
Yeah. No, I agree. It just kind of.
Or
just,
no, I may use it in some type of a bomb for somebody, but.
There you go. Something. But anyway, and then I didn't realize that PWD is part of those core utils. That's not just a regular command. That's it.
I might sneak that because at work sometimes I'll give little snippets, like little one-liners or stuff to other people to run when they're having problems investigating something.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they just run my code without reading and understanding. I might sneak that in.
yes.
No, it'll blow up and say, I told you not to run code you don't understand.
Yeah, that's exactly what it does.
Funny.
So, anyway. Oh, there it goes right now. Look at that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mary said, oh. Yes, oh.
And it's just running. All right, we're going to...
Hey, but it doesn't look like it is because it's the same thing.
True.
So you don't see the pixels change.
True.
But they are changing.
Yes.
Funny how that works.
It is. All right, well, I don't know where we've gone. We've gone into some kind of time warp. But anyway, I think I actually took us there. So I just wanted to mention that, that yes tool because it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
You don't have to quote what you're putting there or anything?
No. Oh. I don't think
so.
I bet if it's multi-word, you do.
Yeah, like, a sentence, I did. That's what I did for, and it worked.
Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. I guess it's probably time to move on to our next segment.
Yeah.
Before we lose everyone.
Although Matt's supposed to do the next segment, and he's busy typing right now.
Yeah, Matt's
so
not ready.
He's probably typing some crazy statement. Is there a yes in front of it?
Yeah, but it didn't do anything.
You must not have the...
Oh, you know why?
It's your work laptop.
No.
What? You don't have the core utilities installed?
No.
Do you have yes as an alias?
No.
Yes. No. What? What is it, Matt?
There's an apostrophe in the word don't.
Oh.
So you have to put it in quotes. You didn't put it in quotes?
I did put it in quotes. Single quotes.
Oh.
Not double. Okay, that explains it. Then I think...
So you saw D-O-N?
No, I saw just the carrot saying, okay, we're continuing to the next line because this line isn't done.
Okay. Yeah, just put do not.
No, just double quote.
I just need another single quote.
Okay.
Like that. And now it should run.
There you go. So,
but do you see what's not there?
What's not there?
My single quote.
Hmm. I don't know what happened to it, but I think we're going to have to. All right, so what do we have next, Tony?
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
What?
Go.
Huh?
Go.
Oh. Hi, this is the Colonel News.
For Saturday.
Yeah. The,
All right.
Mainline 3.1.RC1 was released on 8.16. Then on 8.14, the newest stable kernel 3.16.1 was released. And then stable kernel 3.15.10, which is EOL, was released on 8.14 also.
Mm-hmm.
And then the long-term kernel 3.14.17 was released on 8.14. And then long-term kernel 3.10.53 was released on 8.14. 3.4.103 was released on 8.14. And that's all for the kernel news.
Oh.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right, so this week, starting off on the 9th, we have Slack L 1.0. It's Fluxbox Live.
Ooh, 1.0.
Yeah.
That's a momentous one.
They're maturing.
Yeah.
So they're Slackware-based, running Fluxbox as the window manager.
Yeah, and there you go. They've got the Ebi Numeric Office Suite. And the ISO images for this this release are ISO hybrid. So that will be, I think, nice for people who want to
do flash drive instead.
Yeah, yeah. Use a USB drive, or you can just throw it in a CD. And let's see here. One other thing, they are supporting GPT and legacy MBR partition disks still. So I guess that's probably good. At some point, I think that'll be a thing of the past. But for these guys right now, that's the latest.
All right. Right on the 10th, we have Deft Linux 8.2, which they're Lubuntu-based, with a collection of open source utilities for digital forensics and penetration testing. Being Lubuntu, they have LXDE as their desktop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. And one thing that this particular release has is full support for BitLocker encrypted disks.
Nice.
So apparently, which is I think it'd be pretty helpful. And also the file manager, It includes the disk mounts status, and what was I going to say? Oh yeah, OS Int browser. I went to a site. Actually, I googled OS Int, and there's quite a bit of information. It's basically intelligence. Of course, the Int part of it, and there's kind of a military aspect to it. I didn't have really time this morning because I did this at the last minute to look into it any further. But
why are imps
Int.
Significant for intelligence?
Int.
I just don't understand that. Imps and intelligence. I wouldn't necessarily correlate the two.
Small, because they can get into small places. Imps.
Oh
my God, Matt. But anyway, yeah, so, but there's also open source intelligence, and that's, really, I think, what they were referring to. And it's basically intelligence collected from publicly available sources. And in the intelligence community, you know, obviously they use this among other tools to derive, dossiers on people they want to track. So.
All right.
Okay. Well, we'll move on.
On the 12th, we have Univention Corporate Server 3.2-3, or it's also called the UCS, and they are Debian-based, and they use Webbase for their management system. So
yeah, and you know, they've got, as it may be noted there, they've got a kind of a commercial version. But if you want to use it, you want to use it for free, for personal use, they do have a for free license, and that gives you the full version for up to 5 users for tests and private use. So, you know, it's available on their site. But if you're interested in using a commercial version of it, it's got full support and maintenance and all of that, and that's available there too. So, one thing that they included in this release was Active Directory compatibility. It's been improved, actually, and now they support Microsoft's Data Protection Application Program Interface, DPAP. I knew everyone was just waiting to hear that.
Yeah.
But it was something I gleaned from their site when I went and took a look.
All right.
Now, is that because they're running Samba 4 in that? Is that why their Active Directory integration is better? Or?
I think so. Their Open LDAP replication performance has been improved, too. And they've managed to, I think that's related to Active Directory, isn't it? Open LDAP?
Not particularly, no.
Well, LDAP can authenicate against Active Directory.
It can authenticate.
Okay, thanks for saving me.
It can authenticate against Active Directory, but
other stuff.
It's the closest native thing to Active Directory that exists, but when you compare the two, I mean, you got to say when Microsoft does something right, and Active Directory, for all its foibles, is really. Group management done right, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but anyway, so yeah, so these
LDAP
guys
kind of really sucks in comparison, but.
All right.
All right. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay. So, but.
So until Linux can get a solid substitute for Active Directory, and a solid substitute for the Exchange Outlook combination. It'll never own the corporate desktop.
So right? You're saying this year is not the year of
no.
Linux desktop?
Linux corporate desktop.
Oh, okay.
With Chromebooks, we're already making much headway into
the civilian. Yeah.
All right. Continuing on. On the 13th, we have Zorin OS 9 Lite and Educational Lite.
We're laughing over here because Matt keeps trying
we keep
to grab
reaching for the same mouse.
That's because he doesn't have one.
I didn't get my mouse out, and Mary's left-handed. So her mouse
so
is where I would expect
so
my
mouse
to be, yeah.
He's grabbing my mouse, so to speak.
And when we both just reached for it at the same time.
And then we recoil in horror.
And held hands.
No. We recoil in horror. Oh, Matt, that is so funny. I'm sure we'll do it again when the show's
sure.
over. Anyway, I'm sorry, Tony. We're over here just screwing around. What's next?
It was Zorin.
Oh, Zorin.
Light and Educational Light.
Yes. You know, actually, this particular release, I believe isn't that built on the Ubuntu platform?
I honestly can't remember, and I didn't see it. But
yes, they are.
It is. Yeah, and
Mary rarely asks a question she doesn't already know the answer to.
Well, I did have a little bit there. But, yeah, they're going to, this particular release and all the updates and security fixes are going to be available and supported until 2019. So you're talking a good solid 5 years. So if you're looking for a good light desktop that's going to have years of support, that would be a good one to use.
Awesome.
What kernel are they using?
You know,
whatever the Ubuntu one that's probably pushed out.
Yeah, 3.13, I think. In the 3.13. so.
All right. All right, so on the 17th, we have Robo Linux 7.6.1 XFCE. So they're Debian-based for newcomers with the XFCE desktop.
Yeah, no, those guys, I'll tell you, the team that manages this, they're really on a roll with Robo Linux, of course, and they're big on the virtual machines. And if you go to their website, they go on and on about, how you can continue to run XP or Windows 7 if you wish, quote unquote virus free. But what, I think what they're really referring to is the fact that whatever viruses you get on that virtual machine are not going to infect your Robo Linux.
Right. And by running it as a virtual machine, you just take,
you can use snapshots,
and then when it gets infected, you blow that snapshot, that version away and reload an older snapshot, and bam-o, whammo, more infection.
Yeah, so I am kind of curious. I did go out to, I think they're hosted on, the downloads are hosted on GitHub, I think, or SourceForge, one of the two. But anyway, I think one of their recent ISOs had about 5,000 downloads. So, I mean, there's somebody downloading it and using it.
All right.
So, but I kind of a tip of the hat to him because John Martinson, he uses quite a few exclamation points, and you really get excited when you read his stuff. So, all right, Tony, back to you.
All right. On the 18th, we have PC Linux OS 2014.8, and that's their latest update, and they have quite a few versions. They have the KDE, Full Monty, Mini-Me, LXD, and Mate editions.
Yeah, you know, I never really had a chance to this week to look and see what was going on with these particular this particular distro. Although they've been publishing, and I think they're still doing it, a magazine, PC Linux OS magazine, which focuses on this distro, but there's some good information in there just about you know, similarly situated distros. I think this is based on what is it based on? Is it
I don't know. I was looking up, and it's not saying it in their release.
Yeah, I want to say it was based on, like, not Magia, Mandriva, but anyway, yeah, so PC Linux OS, you know, another solid distro.
I thought they were Debian-based.
I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. About it. Here we go. I'm out there at the site. No, I don't think, normally I would know this. So, but, anyway, well, we'll just move on to the next one.
All right.
Solid, I think, is a word I'd use to describe them.
Very cool. All right, and the last on our list is KaOS.
Chaos.
Chaos. 2014.08, and they are using the new 4.14 KDE.
Yeah, these guys wasted no time, but they tend to be cutting edge as far as what they carry on that distro, and they've got this particular release, and I may mention it there in the DistroWatch information, but they've got a new installer with this particular release, and it's based on the Cinchi installer by Intergos, which used to be called Cinarch. Remember?
Yeah.
And I talked about that installer because I really liked it. You really felt like you were configuring your system and able to do a lot of setup work, but it was also somewhat guided so that you didn't get lost. Or at least I didn't get lost, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so so that's now a part of this. I think I took a look at this last year. I would be interested in taking another look at it.
But at that time, you did CinArch, right?
Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
Well, that was about almost 2 years
ago. Or you mean Chaos?
Yeah, Chaos.
Yeah.
KOS. Yeah, I did. I think I did that last year.
Cool.
So these guys are definitely coming along.
Yeah.
And they also, I believe that they throw in a setup for Dropbox. But one thing they did make there, they're making you aware of as far as this release, there's a known issue. If you're going to use the automated method for partitioning and selecting a separate home, it fails to select the correct file system in FS tab. So what you got to do, there are three things you can do. You can either use the advanced option to create partitions for root home and, if desired, swap. Or you do not select a separate home, but move the home partition after install. Or you can install the updated installer in live mode with sudo pacman-sy thus. And thus is, I think that's another part of the installer system they've got. So you can fix it. There are three workarounds to be exact.
All right.
But just a little thing they make you aware of.
All right, cool.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
All right, and at number 5, we have Ubuntu with 1691.
Matt?
Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. I was,
daydreaming.
Yeah.
Screw around.
Let's try that again.
All right.
What's at number 5, Tony?
Ubuntu with 1691.
And trending down.
And number 4, we have PC Linux OS with 1749.
And trending up.
And the number 3 spot is Magia with 1772.
And trending up.
Ooh, still in the number 2 spot is Mint with 2225.
And trending up. Gotta love that minty goodness.
Sorry, Matt.
That's okay.
How can somebody screw up such a short? I'm giving you a hard time. So
no,
what was
at
number 5? Did you say Ubuntu?
Yeah.
Okay, here is the challenge.
We haven't finished our list yet, Mary.
We have one more to go.
Never mind.
And then in the number 1 spot is Symphony OS with 2397.
And trending up.
Okay.
So, Mary, I heard you have
I don't know how anybody could screw up something so simple, Mary.
I deserve that. I so deserve that. I know, I did. Okay, here's what I was going to say. I think I heard you guys, because I was getting ready for my distro review, I think I heard you say that Ubuntu was at number 5?
Yes.
So, do you think it'll fall out of the top 5 next week?
No.
I don't think so.
I'm just trying to see if there's
the
any
next 2 weeks.
If there's any rational, you know, I'm taking a course on how to think like an economist, and there's this whole marginal thinking concept and all this. So I'm trying to think if there's a way for me to
just as long as you think like the right economist, Hayek all the way.
I was going to say Hayek. Oh my God, or Mises or what? Mises.org. Did you ever go to the Austrian school? He's part of the Austrian school of economics.
Yeah.
Hayek, Friedrich Hayek.
Yeah,
I've got his book. What is it, The Road to Randomness? No, it's The Road to...
Road to Randomness.
Oh, Road to Serfdom?
Serfdom, yes.
Okay.
Randomness. Well. That was so random.
I don't know where that came from. Yeah, I do have this book. No, I think those Austrians, they're crazy. Let me tell you something. We would be in the crap can.
No.
After 2008,
no.
Using their methods?
Yes.
Mm, yeah, it's a. You need to use a combination.
No.
Some of them and some of the others.
No.
Okay. But anyway.
Hayek rules. Everyone else rules. All you Keynesians out there, bite it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and move on then. So I guess I'll say that Ubuntu will still be in the top 5. But I bet you.
Only a fool would bet they weren't.
No, the only way they wouldn't be is if there were a major release of some non-Ubuntu-based distro.
No. They'll still be in the top 5.
All right.
I'm quite shocked that they're down at number 5, actually.
Yeah. But, you know, again, it's a non-scientific poll, but still, you know, it's kind of like the, I don't know, well, what can I say? All right. And now?
All right, now up we have...
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
Well, this week... I am reviewing, let's see here, this week's review is of a distro which, if you blinked, you'd miss it. That's because it takes a minimalist approach. So minimal, in fact, that minimal is in its name. That's right. This week's review is of Minimal Linux Live. So would I be saying size doesn't matter for this diminutive Linux distro, or would I be saying pack small, play small at the end of this review? Let's find out. Of course, the name is Minimal Linux Live, and I just posted the link in the chat, and the link will be in the show notes. The maintainer is Ivan Davidov, and he's, I think he's out of Czechoslovakia, Bulgaria. He's out there in Central Europe. The distro's latest birthday was just a couple of weeks ago, actually, at the beginning of August. And it is a derivative of nothing. Source. It's built from source, baby. The kernel they are using, he just updated it. That was one of the reasons for its latest release. It uses 3.15.6. And the review desktop, BusyBox, which, of course, isn't a desktop, but I put that in there.
It's not a utility.
Exactly.
It's a utility set that replaces the, I believe it replaces the GNU utilities.
Not all of them, because there's...
I'm pretty sure it's got its own LS and everything. I'm pretty sure it's a complete replacement for the GNU utilities. They use it in embedded systems.
So are you saying that the yes command that I just used was, that's part of the GNU core utility? Maybe it's also part of BusyBox.
It might be.
Okay.
But
I would say yes.
Okay.
I would say yes.
I would say I'm with Tony. Yes. But anyway, so that's the review desktop. Haha. Now you don't really, okay, first the install process. Well, you don't really install Minimal Linux. After all, it's a live distro running completely in RAM. However, unlike most distros already packaged as a neat ISO file, Minimal Linux is simply a set of scripts which are run to create the neat ISO file. How neat? The ISO file is only 7 megabytes. I mean, this is even smaller than Damn Small Linux.
Yes. Is it smaller than TinyCore?
I think so, by about 4 megabytes. I think TinyCore was 12, as I recall from my review.
I think the last time I installed it was 10, so.
Yeah, so it's... just comes in just a shade under that. Now, the first thing you do is download the zip file from Minimal Linux's website. The file contains several scripts, each numbered in the order to be executed, with a name that completely describes what it does. So you've got the first one with the zero. Of course, it all starts with zero. It's prepare.sh. And by the way, speaking of sh, you are not running bash in this either. I think you're just running the standard bourne shell, sh, bin sh. What is that? Is that a standard shell?
Yeah, bin sh is standard bourne shell.
Okay.
But it doesn't really exist anymore in modern times here. Most of the time, bin sh is just a symlink to bin bash.
This is on that live CD since it's supposed to
be a tiny CD, but...
Yeah, I'm thinking.
I'd be shocked if it didn't have a full implementation of bash.
It doesn't because I checked.
It's BusyBox.
I ran echo, what is it? You want to print one of your variables? You do echo $ shell, I think, isn't it?
It will tell you the shell, yeah.
Yeah, it was bin sh.
Well, yeah, but what is bin sh?
All right. Well.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Yeah. So anyway, but so then the next script is get kernel. Then there's build kernel. Then there's get busybox, build busybox, generate rootfs, pack rootfs, and then generate ISO. So a very straightforward set of shell scripts. Now I opened them up. Well, actually most of them up, and one piece of it that is kind of universal across almost all of them is that there's a reach out, of course, to like kernel.org to download the specified Linux kernel. You're going out to BusyBox's website to download that also. But then you, as the user who is going to be building this Linux distro, runs the script called build_minimal_linux_live. And all of the other scripts that are called by that script to build the ISO. Now, Minimal Linux's website lists several dependencies that must be satisfied in order to generate the ISO file. It's your typical types of things. You need wget. I mean, I had them all already installed. Make, the GCC, which, of course, is the GNU compiler. And then something called BC, which I already had, and I didn't realize it's an arbitrary precision numeric processing language.
Yes. It's.
Yeah.
You mostly just use it to add numbers. That's what I do with it.
Okay. Yep. And that's, so that was part of it. And then also, SysLinux had to be installed. And I found out that, SysLinux, according to, I think it was Wikipedia, because I went and looked it up just to see, you know, what this was all about. It's not normally used to boot full Linux, installations. Instead, it's most often used to boot, or for boot or rescue floppy disks, live USB, other lightweight boot systems. So it kind of made sense that, Minimal Linux Live would be using SysLinux. And then the final, dependency that you have to satisfy is, GenISO image. So again, all of those were in place for me and I was ready to begin. So I went ahead and ran the script, and waited for the process to conclude. Now, the typical data, flew past the screen as the ISO file was built. I mean, it just kind of scrolls as it's, you know, putting it together. So after about 15 minutes or so, I had my 7 megabyte ISO file. I thought, wow, so much time for such a small file, but, I know it was, there's a lot of compiling and stuff going on in the background. Now, to check what was included, I used Arc to take a peek. Now, inside that ISO file, there are 5 files, the largest of which, of course, was the Linux kernel. So there's boot.cat, initrd.img, isolinux.bin, isolinux.cfg, and then the Linux kernel. Now, in addition to the ISO file, the directory where the ISO was built had an extra folder called work, and then in that were all the files that had been downloaded in order to build the ISO file. Now, although I chose to burn the ISO to a CD, you can also put it on a USB, or you can also install it or boot it using VirtualBox, and they go into a little bit of detail there. Also, I want to mention, too, that the tutorial on the Minimal Linux Live website went into considerable detail about not only the distro itself making it, but also about the scripts that are used. And, yeah, Matt, go ahead.
Lua from the IRC sent me a link, and BusyBox binsh is Ash.
Oh!
Ash.
Ash. Okay. Wow. Hey, thank you, Lua. Thank you very much. I had no idea. Okay. So that's the Ash shell. Ash shell.
All right.
We're going to move on. Yeah. I don't know. Matt, I tell you, Matt, you're just taking me. I'm just going crazy over here. Okay. Well, we're going to go right back on our little journey.
All right.
So, anyway, so I was talking about the folder where this was built and the subfolders that were in there, of course. Now, let's see here. Okay, the produced ISO image only contains the default options for the Linux kernel in BusyBox, and, you know, again, a very simple init RAM FS. So there's nothing customized about this. It's just vanilla. The project team leader, and he may be the only person on the team, suggests that you can write easily, or that you can easily learn from these scripts and later modify them to add more stuff, more things. From there, you'll have all the necessary tools and skills to create your own fully functional Linux distro, they said, entirely from scratch. Linux from scratch. Mm. Actually, it's probably one chapter out of Linux from scratch, but it was kind of interesting. Now, so once the ISO then is built, it's time to boot it, and I was pretty impressed because it took longer to fire up the CD to generate that, to go through the boot process. I think just the boot process itself probably took about 4 or 5 seconds. I mean, maybe 6. But it was very fast, and I had a nice root prompt. No users, just root user. There's no home directory. I created that.
Wait, was your networking ready to go?
Matt, are you reading my review?
No.
I say here, did I tell you how secure Minimal Linux is? Lack of networking makes it one of the most secure distros I've seen.
Well, it's not a lack of, it's just not set up.
It's not set up. No, that's true. That's true. As a matter of fact, Etsy, where you'd expect to find network configuration files, is completely empty. Save for a welcome text file that says, "Welcome to Minimal Linux Live." So this is just really a bare bones, it's like a framework, really, that boots. And then it's up to you. I really see this as an excellent way to learn about how to build a distro. And that's essentially what the project maintainer said. Now, we talked earlier about the core utils, and I think really what I should be saying here is that the BusyBox utils, because they look to be the core utils because I ran all those commands, but it may not be, as you said, Matt. But another thing I did, too, I created a couple of directories. I created a home directory. I created a mount directory, and then within that mount directory, I created a disk directory. I had ejected the ISO, and because the whole thing was in RAM, and then I plugged the ISO back in and mounted it just to check and see if I was able to do that, and did it without a problem at all. And really, unless I wanted to sit there and start building some networking into it and doing all sorts of stuff, which I didn't want to do, I was pretty much done. So if you're looking for a bare-bones distro that you can bend to your will, give Minimal Linux a try, but don't blink, because you might miss it. So, I thought that this was a really great tool to use as kind of a basic framework to play around with. I don't even think it had any modules. The kernel, well, other than the default things that are included with the Linux kernel, there's really, no Broadcom wireless module in there.
Right.
So, anyway, but that's my review of Minimal Linux Live.
That was a pretty minimal review.
Yeah, it was quick, but I did want to take a look at it, and the scripts ran just fine. But he said you can modify those scripts, add some things to it, and
you actually talked to the maintainer?
He said in his website.
Oh,
that I read.
I thought you might have had like an online conversation.
I almost emailed them, but I didn't. So there you have it.
All right, thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
So we're going on to...
It's time for the tech news of the week.
The news. So Matt, you said you found something, didn't you?
Yeah, we'll let Tony go first.
All right. Well, the one thing I found was from Gizmodo. They said that the Toyota cars will have Nexus 7s built into the dash. So, most of the cars now are having carputers built into it. And
carputers.
Yeah.
That's pretty
and,
cool.
And almost every car manufacturer wants their own, custom setup and custom PC to be able to run a lot of different things in it. Although Toyota is turning it a little bit different. They're going with a Nexus 7, and it has a... their customized Android that they're working with. I want to say it was Asus or some company that's spelled similar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Asus-owned Unimax will create something known as the Toyota Intelligent System, or TIS. Good thing there's not another T in there. But and it's going to be, basically it's going to be running the Nexus 7. It'll have multimedia and voice recognition and 4G and Google Maps and everything else that comes with it.
Including games?
I'm sure it'll be up there playing.
I see that as an accident waiting to happen.
Is it visible for the driver? Because if it is, this is an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. You can see right, there's a picture right on the
site. Yeah, I'm looking at a picture, and it's really in the dash between the driver,
right where your radio would go.
It's like, all modern cars have that big screen there with their, with their center.
Right in the center of the dash, yeah. And it looks really cool. And I think this is really where it should be going. Because then there can be a separate computer running the car and then have some kind of link.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to pull info from it so that there's no, if there's no hard read-write back and forth, then you can't really hack into the car system like a lot of the vulnerabilities of
right,
the finding.
Right, like the tablet could act as like a scan tool. It would only have read access, not write access.
Exactly. So it can still pull all that same information.
Right.
It can get like your speed and the gas mileage and, whether you need an oil change or whatever it's going to do. But all it's going to do is tell you and then maybe send that info off to your email where the carputer itself or the car's diagnostic systems and whatever running on the inside can actually be doing the writing and reading and changing and stuff.
So, all right. Sounds very cool.
Yeah.
So I got to buy a car to get a tablet. That's
That's right. A Nexus 7, which is, I think, not the latest.
Right. But what's the coolest thing about it is that you can swap it out with a newer one later.
As long as it's the same size.
Right. Yeah. And
so did somebody send Google or whoever makes Nexus, Asus or Google, whoever makes
Google that makes the Nexus 7. But,
yeah.
Well,
did somebody tell them.
That's what I thought was interesting is that it's a Google tablet and Asus is making the OS for it. Why didn't they go with an Asus tablet? Although I'm sure what would happen down the road is similar to how car radios right now, there's like a little adapter that you stick aftermarket radio into it.
And the tablet is like the Nexus hardware is fairly open hardware, correct? Like it's all generic off the shelf hardware. Whereas Asus and Dell and
Samsung
they all have their proprietary chipsets and stuff in there.
Hmm.
Like Dell was the first at that. They're a real big innovator on doing the proprietary motherboards and configurations so that they could get more compact units. So
All right, cool. Anyway, so I can't wait for that to come out. That's really cool.
You're gonna buy a car?
Yeah, I'll buy the car just for the tablet. I've seen people take, they can get a Nexus 7 and there's like a dashboard cover that will cover the entire dash. So it makes it look like the Nexus 7 is built into your dash. And it's just a stock Nexus 7 you can put on there. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. They make those dash covers for, I've seen that, like quite a few different, like I bet you could get one for your,
HHR?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but why would I want to do that?
Well, you can
be trendy and cool.
And you could have, instead of using your phone for directions, you'd have, a 10-inch screen sitting there for directions. And
yeah, I guess that would be handy.
You can run.
But then I'd have to have a carrier. You'd have to have a carrier for that device because my Nexus 7 right now is wireless. But I don't have a carrier.
Is it built right into the dash?
Oh, you mean like a cell carrier?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. You can tether
like
it to your phone.
Garmin, I guess those Garmin newbies.
Right, but no, or you could install a mapping program onto it, so you wouldn't need internet connection.
Right. Yeah. There's offline mapping programs. Oh, there's.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, well, of course, they don't tell you where you are relative to.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
It would give you directions.
Means it's just not pulling maps at that second.
Right.
But GPS doesn't have to have cell connection to work.
Oh, because it connects
to satellites for
the
GPS.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
So that's.
Wow, we really got a lot out of that news story.
That's right.
Well, all right. Thanks, Tony. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's all I had for this week.
All right. Well, I have a little bit of a story. It was about how Munich, Germany is...
Dumping?
No, they're not dumping. The new mayor, they just had elections there, and the new mayor, who has a huge grudge against the old mayor, and they've been mortal-like enemies forever...
Mm.
And the old mayor was the one that instituted that switch over from Microsoft to Linux.
Mm-hmm.
So he instituted a resolution to look at possibly returning to Microsoft. To look at possibly returning to Microsoft. Okay.
No, however, those are two different thoughts.
Yeah,
possibly
it is. It's to look at possibly going back to Microsoft.
You gotta get that right. Okay.
Okay. And if you want the true story on this, you can go to ZDNet. ZDNet's got a great article on it. Okay. But that was not the first place I saw it. The first place I saw it was in a G+ IT professionals group that's heavily Microsoft influenced. That I'm a member of.
They were crowing about it, weren't they?
Yes, they posted this with the comment snicker because they like to bait us Linux guys there.
Mm.
And it's the title at NeoWin, if that gives you any idea of the probable fudness of this site.
Air quotes included.
Yeah. Munich, Germany realizes that deploying Linux was a disaster going back to Windows.
I thought it was an Onion article.
it's so wrong and atrocious that it just makes my head hurt.
So, all right, obviously they didn't do the proper analysis of the information that came out of Munich.
They did no analysis.
They just jumped to a conclusion.
Yes.
Well, we all do that.
Yeah.
Well, we do. I mean, not all the time, but I think, I mean, I know sometimes that I will jump to a conclusion when I just read a headline.
Let me read that headline to you again.
Yes.
Well, let me read you the headline from ZDNet. ZDNet says, after a 10-year Linux migration, Munich considers switching back to Windows and Office.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's the ZDNet headline.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable headline.
I mean, that's a little more harsher than what the actuality is, but that is a reasonable headline.
Yeah.
Okay? Let me read you now the Neowin headline one more time. Munich, Germany realizes that deploying Linux was a disaster going back to Windows.
Very different.
There's no defending that, Mary.
No. But not to digress, but that goes back to my point on Google Plus when I posted that headlines, I get ticked off at headlines because they can be so misleading, and that headline is extremely misleading.
But if you read the article associated with this headline,
it supports the headline.
It supports the headline 100%.
Yeah. Okay. So. Anyway, so they just read a ton of stuff into a comment.
Lied. Yes, they lied.
All right, I'll bet you $5 that Munich will be back on Windows in 5 years.
You're on, because it's not happening.
We are just shaking.
Got to wait 5 years to collect this $5, but it will be sweet, people. Sweet.
We should each deposit $5 in a compounding account. We could have like $500,000 or something. I read about that. Or wait a minute, I think
$5, isn't it the law of sevens?
There's mine.
Yeah. Oh my God, he threw it out on the table. Oh man. I have a 10.
So put that down, take my 5.
Oh, there goes my spending money for today. Where we go? Where's this money going? Take your 5.
No. Well,
I'm not going to take that. I left 5 on the table. You left it on the table.
Whoever came and cleaned that table got a nice 10.
Our KDE release party. All right. Actually, this is supposed to be a news segment, and we've devolved into a little back and forth here. So, anyway, well, it will be, seriously, though, it will be interesting to see the fallout from the overreaction by Neowin. All right. So that's your article?
That's my news.
Okay. Well, I have a couple. There was and this one, coincidentally is also from ZDNet, and I got a kind of kick out of it because, Docker is that open source platform.
Docker and OpenStack are the hot items in cloud computing.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, Stephen J. Von Nichols just had a article that he released a couple days ago. What is today, the 23rd or 24th?
Today is 23rd.
Okay, it was released yesterday. And there was a survey that found, not surprisingly, OpenStack to be the most popular, but the second place one was Docker, and they said what was really surprising about it is that it came out of nowhere because, it was over the last 12 months, Docker has generated so much interest and enthusiasm that it's come out of nowhere to hit second.
I hate to plead ignorance like this, but...
Why?
Well, because you like to think you know a lot. But mm-hmm. But Docker, that's more for containers as opposed to virtual machines, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tony, do you know?
Mary, yeah, I thought it was a container system.
That's what I thought, too.
And where OpenStack is...
Is all virtual machines.
Virtual machines, yeah. So
I think you can put some... Well, I don't know if they've got any preformed containers.
I mean, containers and VMs are almost the same. There's a slight difference in mm-hmm. the way they use their kernel and stuff, but...
Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, in this article, they were talking about DevOps tools. And apparently Puppet was number one with 23%. I know you guys use Puppet.
Yeah, we use Puppet.
And then it was closely followed by a tool that I've never heard of, and you probably will have heard of this, called Ansible.
Ansible, yep.
Okay.
That's configuration management. I think it comes from the BSD universe, actually.
Yes, all right. And then SaltStack had 13.3%.
I've also heard of SaltStack, and I'm very surprised that it's that high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 13.3. It was in third place. And then coming in fourth was Juju.
Oh, that's Ubuntu.
Canonical, right?
That's Ubuntu.
Yeah, I saw that.
I would have put CF Engine up there.
Chef?
Yeah.
Yeah, that came in, actually, that just squeaked in right behind it, because Juju was 10.7 and Chef was 10.4. So Stephen J. Von Nichols' take on this, he says, I think DevOps is still wide open and no one has really established themselves as the clear alpha dog yet. So
I think Puppet is, although Ansible's showing some nice promise.
Is it?
Yeah. But I still think Puppet is more, you can do more with Puppet than you can with Ansible.
Yeah. Okay. Guess what I found?
What?
On the Docker website. How is this different from virtual machines?
Right.
It says each virtualized application includes not only the application, which may be tens of megabytes, and the necessary binaries and libraries, but also the entire guest operating system, which may weigh tens of gigabytes.
Huh.
So you can pull out. That's a lot of storage that's not needed.
Because
it runs separate OSs, but using shared files, or
it shares the kernel.
Yeah,
like they all the different.
It's like BSD jails do that.
Right. I can't remember what I just called it. Not virtualization. What Docker is.
Containers.
Thank
containers,
you.
Yeah.
The containers use this. All the containers on the machine would use the same kernel. Mm-hmm. They would use the hypervisor's kernel, if you want to think of it as a hypervisor.
Okay.
But
yeah.
It's not really a hypervisor. So,
and then the next thing it says, the Docker engine container comprises just the application and its dependencies. It runs an isolated process and user space on the host operating system, sharing the kernel and other containers. Thus, it enjoys the resource isolation and allocation benefits of VM, but is much more portable and efficient.
Hmm. Yeah,
very
but it's
cool.
Not as cool as Cubes OS.
Okay.
What's the other one that...
KVM.
VZ.
VZ, yeah, that's what I was thinking
of. Oh, yeah, VZ. Yeah, didn't we have a discussion about that
last fall? We had... We had Scott on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Talking about that.
Yeah. He's a big VZ guy.
All right. Cool.
So, yeah. So, that was one article. And then I've just got a brief one here. This is from the Always Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth department. And this is, I found this. I'm thinking, I didn't even open it up. It's, Microsoft IBM. Now, talk about a cast of strange bedfellows. Microsoft, IBM, and Red Hat.
What?
Yes, I know. I know. I'm thinking, where am I? They are backing Google's, it's called, Kubernetes? Kubernetes. And this particular, technology is Google's open source technology for managing Docker containers. So, you think about that, it's that, you know, that underlying piece, and then it manages them. She said...
Is it like the set of APIs so you can manage the Dockers?
What, Matt?
Nothing, Mary. Keep going.
All right. Well, how was I going to end it?
I don't know. I was kind of curious as to where you were going to go with that.
I believe in theater it's called a deus ex machina, where
yes.
It all just comes together.
Exactly.
One mashup.
Boom, God strikes a lightning bolt.
Boom, Mary says, and it manages it. Well, it's only because I'm treading on information.
Mary is classically Greek trained, so.
Oh, all right. I do have Latin 101 I was going to take, but... Anyway, maybe I should take Greek. But anyway, yeah, so it's Google, Kubernetes is Google's open source, container management project. And actually they announced it earlier this year.
Really, Mary?
Shut up. I'm sorry, Matt, be quiet.
No, you meant shut up.
I gotta stay classy here. But anyway, but this article in GigaOm, they said it's a peace pipe because you've got these.
Giga what?
GigaOm.
GigaOm?
GigaOm?
Ohm.
Ohm.
OHM?
Yeah, GigaOm.
Yeah,
that's what I said. That's my story and I'm sticking to it. Anyway, but GigaOm, they commented about the diverse nature of the participants. I just don't even think I'm going to finish this because you're just over there laughing. But they've all supported Docker. See, they've all supported Docker in one way or another. And I think they're afraid that if Google's, their container management, project, it becomes
really takes off.
Yeah. They're going to be left behind in the wake.
Yes.
So that's not a good thing for them. So anyway, but that's the peace pipe part. They all, they're businesses. They know. You gotta sometimes
whatever's
cooperate.
Whatever's going to make them the jack.
That's right. And then as a Trojan horse, of course, it says Google, on the other hand, pretty clearly sees Kubernetes as a way to make its own compute engine cloud stand out by helping make application management a generic experience across all environments. So, there's that angle to it too. And so it's, again, if you accept it, you're going to have to deal with possibly that. So they said if Docker and Kubernetes become standard methods of managing applications, that means a point of differentiation in the cloud that will move back down the infrastructure layer where Google thinks it has the advantage with its decades of experience in building the world's largest systems. So they're pretty confident. And this article that I'll post in the show notes has an interview with one of the senior vice presidents talking about this. So I thought it was kind of an interesting thing because containers and virtualization. I was working with a customer this week, and they've got three instances of our software, and I was on a WebEx with them.
Are they that big a law firm? They have that many offices?
No, it's not a firm. It's another entity, but. This is a different version of our product, and so they needed three because they needed some Chinese walls.
Oh, okay.
I was on a WebEx with him, and he's got his WebEx hypervisor, whatever, or not WebEx, his virtual machine hypervisor, and he's got the whole list of virtual machines, and so the three were just listed there. I mean, each one of them has been virtualized, and I guess my point is that I can remember when virtualization just was this brand new technology and concept, and now it's everybody has it.
I'm not a big fan.
Why?
I like the idea of containers,
mm-hmm.
and I really think we should use a container system at work mm-hmm. on our shared machines
mm-hmm.
instead of the way we currently do the shared machines.
But virtualizing the machine is not what you like.
But I'm not a big fan of virtualizing the actual machines.
Mm-hmm. I like it. For testing out things and,
Can you share a single IP address with multiple?
Well, what happens is the VMs would get a
bridge? No, NAT.
A non-routable IP address. And then they use the address of the hypervisor as their gateway.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. So anyway, cool. That was my other article. I was on kind of a container virtual machine kick this week. So, a container kick. Those are my two articles.
Or you could give your VMs can also have a routable IP and work that way. But
I was thinking on a shared machine where they don't have, where it's one IP address for the entire machine and not one IP per customer.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Well, some of our shared environments, each customer gets an IP. At least one.
Well, that's nice. Yeah.
All right. Well, great. Let me know when you're ready for KDE Corner.
I think we are right now.
All right. You remember that cross-stitching utility? That cross-stitching
tool?
They just released a new update. I had to mention it again. KX Stitch.
God. You're not going to talk about this again, are
no,
you?
No, I'm not. Okay. Only as a joke. Only as a joke.
Do you not remember the first time we talked about
this?
Yes,
I was mocked heavily. but it kind of cracked me up that, I mean, there is this app. But yeah. Anyway, no, the thing I want to mention is, Flacon. 1.0.1 has been released. Now, what this does, this is kind of cool. This is a application that extracts individual tracks out of one big audio file. And, so if you've got, you know, you've got a whole set of, audio files and you want to break them out like that, you can use this, this particular utility.
So,
like,
wait a minute, when you say it'll break out one track.
If you recorded an entire tape, into your computer, and then it would find those blank spaces and put it into separate files.
Unless you've merged them into one.
Wait a minute. Uh-huh. I'm still not.
You ever heard of stereo?
Yeah, I have, but what I'm trying to understand is the multiplicity. Because it's not talking about stereo. It's not talking about a left channel and a right channel. It's talking about tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Like an 8-track had 8 tracks on it. That's why it was called an 8-track.
Or is it talking about, like, a track is a song on an album?
Well, you could always do that. If you had one file that was multiple songs, I could always break it into
But you'd have to
songs.
Know where the exact split is, and this does it for you.
Is that what it's talking about, Mary?
Yeah.
Okay.
Never did I, in my wildest days, did I expect that one of my little KDE updates would elicit such conversation.
What do we define track? That's what we have to do.
Oh, sure. Individual tracks from one big audio file containing entire album of music and saves them as separate audio files. It uses the information from the appropriate cue file. It says down here, now the import formats are WAV, FLAC, APE, WavePack, True, Audio, TTA, and the supported out formats are FLAC, WAV, WavePack, AAC, OGG, or MP3. So, I'm thinking that it's just the basic audio tracks.
What Tony was saying, whereas it will take an album and break it into the individual songs, and that's what it means by track. Yeah. It's referring to each song as a track.
Yep.
Oh, I see what you're saying. One big audio file.
Well, of the whole album, i.e., Jethro Tull's Songs from the Wood. Mm-hmm. If you had that as a single audio file.
Or Jethro Tull's Benefit.
Okay. You could then use this software to then break that out into individual songs.
I see, yep. Yeah, because if you take a look here at the screenshot of this tool, you can see here that there's all your tracks right there. And then there's like a CD at the top.
Although it refers to a cue file. If you don't have that cue file, do you have to create it?
Well, if you don't have the cue file, you really can't play the other, the whole
if
big
If you don't
album
have the cue,
either.
You're screwed. No, just
because the cue file is how you would play, like, track 3 from the album.
Oh, right.
Oh, speaking of cueing and songs, you know something that my Android phone does with my and I don't even think it's Android, it's really Google Play, which I hate. I think it's the worst audio player ever.
I was listening to my Google Play last night.
Try Fusion. Look at Try Fusion.
My music's already all in Google Play.
Oh, okay, cuz mine's on my device and I use Fusion, but no, let me
mine's in Google Play, so anywhere. Right. I can, it's in the cloud, Mary.
Okay. Well, let me just explain to you what happened. It took any quiet spot in a song, or, I mean, on this album of mine, it's like it considered it a new song. So it just took and divided the CD of mine up into these, some tracks don't make sense. It irritated me and I now use Fusion. But anyway, I want to just mention this
Flacon.
So a nice way to break that up if you want that. And then the only last thing I got, I think that's the last of it. That's all I got. That's all you can make fun of me today.
All right.
Nothing else.
All right, so we're going on to...
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a list.
And I got to stop there because, again, I haven't fixed our soundbite with our missing...
the phone
number.
That doesn't, yeah.
Although, our extensive listener feedback this week.
Yeah.
I've got.
Do you know that the Brian feedback here?
that we got?
Brian?
Yeah?
I think I deleted it.
Do you know why that's so old?
No.
I discovered it sitting in our on our website waiting to be approved.
Oh. Oh, from Brian.
Yeah.
Oh. When was it? What episode was it from? Brian's one of the guys in our lug, but he made a mention, and it's not coming up for me right now.
Huh. Well, let me, I have something, listener feedback, and I'd be happy to talk about it if you guys are ready
for
that.
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
All right, let's go ahead and do that. You know, I of course, kind of tout my PCBSD laptop and how 10.0.2 is,
the bomb diggity.
Yeah, it is. It's working pretty well, although, you know, I didn't have sound this morning for some reason. I'll have to look into that. But anyway,
I bet you just have it muted somewhere.
That could be. But one of our listeners, Brad, emailed me and said, "You're absolutely right. I just installed my first PCBSD on hardware 10.0.2. It's amazing. I have a Debian laptop and my PCBSD laptop sitting side by side, and they almost feel the same. Plus, I love the ZFS and the pre-upgrade snapshots that get loaded into the grub menus. I had to roll back today after upgrading my NVIDIA driver from legacy to current and broke X. And then he asked me if I was still running 9. 10 is worth a try. But anyway, I'm running 10.0.2, and he's right. And that's something I think that came out with 10.0.2 is the snapshot that gets taken before the upgrade occurs. So if something goes wrong, you can roll right back to it, which I think is a very nice feature. And I continue to like PCBSD, if I could hear it. So, but anyway, email that got. I think it came directly to me, but I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware of that. So.
Cool.
And I have Brian's up, which is from episode 131, Sysadmin Day.
Ooh.
So yeah. It had been sitting in our queue there for a while.
For a while.
Sorry, Brian. I just saw it this week. And he says that this is one time in a long time I have to disagree with Matt.
It's surprising that people actually agree with you.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, my gosh, Tony, that was funny.
The distro that I am considering for desktop use is definitely not a server distro, does not have an Office suite installed. By Matt's definition, Arch is not a desktop distro. Not if it doesn't come with a productivity suite. If it doesn't come with a productivity suite, it's not a desktop distro. Well,
so what is it then?
It's a server distro.
It's just Linux.
Arch?
Just Linux.
With a desktop on it.
Yep.
Okay.
So it can't be a desktop distro.
Without a productivity suite. I have spoken.
Okay.
All right.
Great, Tony. Next
comment we had was on last episode. It says, "Hi, Matt." And this is from James, by the way. It says, "Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Instead of using two aux, you could use a single sud."
Where did this come from? I didn't see this.
I didn't see the email also, but it's in our comments.
So he's making it up.
If you go to our show.
And he gives you the sud command.
Yeah. Hero.
Hey.
Ready to write it down? Single quote, dollar sign.
What you know what I did last night, though?
What?
I wrote my first if-then in awk.
Mm. Ooh, did it work?
Yes.
Excellent. What was if-then?
If
blank?
No, if the line contains this word, then print this. If the line contains this word, then print that.
Okay.
Nice.
All right.
No, wait a minute. If it contains this word, print this. If it contains the second phrase, print that. What if it doesn't contain them at all?
It will contain one or the other.
Okay, I see. Great. Good for you.
All right. And that's, we had a couple of spams.
That we won't read.
Right.
Oh,
and then
interesting?
We had a Google Plus comment.
Okay.
That Matt and Tom commented or talked back and forth. Wasn't really a comment on the show.
For some reason, my browser got. I'm using Opera, and it locked up. I almost said a really bad word.
Oh,
Tony, right. Have to bleep.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So he posted his song that he wrote. He actually sent it to me a long time ago, like two years ago.
Yeah,
Tom Duchesne.
Tom Duchesne.
And Matt promised him that we'd play it this time.
He didn't just write it. Do you know he's performing every instrument and singing it, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know that. And what he did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he would record one track and then listen to that as he's playing and recording the next track. So he plays guitar and drum and singing and
wow.
So yeah. He's quite talented.
You gonna play a little bit of it?
Yeah, and that'll be our outro music.
Yes.
Okay.
When we have to give it that explicit warning.
That's right, that it's explicit.
Has explicit lyrics.
Oh, it does?
Yes.
It's kind of
garbled. Anatomical
explicit.
References,
not,
just swear words,
I
or
did,
what?
I did not hear them. I didn't listen to the whole song.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to enough of it to know that I would like it. It sounds like my kind of music.
Because of the explicit lyrics,
no,
or just the tune?
Because of the music itself.
Okay.
I guess it.
I'm kidding.
It's not like straight out. It's kind of garbled. It's hard to understand at points. And maybe this is a different recording than what I had listened to before. But we'll see. We'll listen to it for our outro music. But in case you have sensitive ears, you may not want to listen to it.
But we're pretty much a show for adults.
Yeah. Well, or we could give the
family show.
This song.
Yeah. Yeah. Gather the kids around. It's time for Sunday Morning Linux Review. Yeah. Okay.
There's a few people that do that.
Oh, yeah.
I think Ken Phelan's kids won't listen to different Linux distro or podcasts.
Well, that's why we're giving them the warning.
That's right.
Put your fingers in the kids' ears.
May not be suitable for work.
And before we go to this, though, one reminder that we are going to be shifting our live recording.
That's right.
Time. So that's coming up in what, a few weeks, right?
Yep. Our next show and shows beyond that, until we say otherwise, will be on Sunday mornings. So we're moving from Saturday morning records to Sunday morning records.
Oh, I'm out of town.
Yay. What, for the next show?
Yes. I just realized that.
On the 7th?
Yes.
Mary, we talked about this and coordinated this date.
Oh, I might be back. I'll check and see. I'll know. I might be back. Going up north.
Our next live show will be September 7th.
Sunday.
Sunday. Sunday morning, September 7th.
Sunday!
And we'll be reviewing Linux.
Right. So check out our Google Plus stream and or our website.
Domingo.
Sunday!
I don't know. There's something in the air, Tony.
All right. Are we ready for our music?
Yes.
All right, so.
It was like almost a perfect stereo.
our music this week is going to be Dirty Mother by Tom Duchesne.
Long time spent, and now we're trying to do.
he's doing
he's in the queue.
Did he say any cuss words there?
No, you know what? I guess now that I'm thinking about back that it was, I was trying to keep it more like strictly like kid friendly.
Okay.
And it, like Dirty Mother is referring to.
Okay.
Stuff, I guess. And now that we've laxed those, it doesn't matter anymore.
Oh, it does matter.
Especially since I accidentally not cropped out Matt's swearing in one episode. Now we got feedback one time that we're an explicit show.
We're an explicit show. Not kid friendly.
That's right.
Wow.
Anyway.
Okay.
All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 133.
It's Morse time.
Beep, 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 beep. As I closed the browser. I actually locked up the one that had that thing in it.
All right.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying same Matt time, same Matt channel. You gotta point with the finger when you say that.
In two weeks.
All right.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tony Bemis, and Matt Bender.
Bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduk to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
Morse time.
We're going to do it again.
I was thinking we had this whole thing
planned out.
Okay, Matt.
I even said, are you guys ready?
I forgot totally.
I was ready.
All right.
I'm ready this time.
But Mary,
you got an uptake.
But hey, I have a question.
It's more
Why
time.
Do we have to remain silent during the intro because if you cut it out anyway?
He doesn't.
I don't. I didn't this last time. I prefer not to cut it out, but this time I'm going to.
Yeah. Because we screwed that up. So, all right, let's let it roll again. We'll try it one more time.
And it's for that recording, too. If you're silent, then it works
Because I don't edit. I don't edit that recording.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
That would actually make sense.
That's right.
And we're pointing to the YouTube. Yes.
Yes, our YouTube stream.
That's right.
The actual stream is going out of the building right there, down the wire.
God. Around the thingamajig. Around the thingamajig.
All right.
All right. And up the wazoo. Whoa. Okay. Well.
Maybe you're wazoo, Mary.
All right. Did you know there's a Wahoo, Nebraska?
So.
Okay. Did you know there's an Intercourse, Pennsylvania?
Well, I guess we know now. All right, Tony.
Okay. So, you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is.
Wait a minute. Mark the time, because I just said, wait a minute.
All right. Time is 1:51.
Okay. I forgot what the freaking new thing is called. What is?
It's Morse time.
Same Matt time.
That's
same
it.
Matt.
Okay.
What is it?
Got it. What's same channel? Matt time, same Matt channel.
Yeah.